New parak tonight, the fourth parak. It's a real doozy. Some things that maybe you're already familiar with, some things that could always use, always bear repeating, but certainly a little bit of a different perspective from Shlomo HaMelech, at least in one pasuk is very fascinating to me. He gets very candid with us, which we'll see. But let's start with the first pasuk. Shimu vanim musar av. Now, this sounds like a pasuk we've seen before. What does it sound like? Shema b'ni musar avich. What's the difference between Shimu vanim musar av and Shema b'ni musar avicha? Shema b'ni is listen, my son. He's talking to his son or someone specific. And here it's Shimu vanim, that you children should hear or listen. Musar av. Not avicha, not your father, but a father. So now that obviously gives even more generality to the discussion, and therefore the Mefarshim go even wider with their net about who the father is. Is it everyone's father? Is it Hashem, the ultimate father? Is it referring to David, which we'll see soon? So there's a little bit more of an array in terms of who that's referring to. The next part of the pasuk, v'hakshivu adasbina. And what is hakshivu mean? Also to listen. So our first question is, what's the difference between Shimu and Hakshivu? So if you look at the Gra, the Gra tells us, Rach patias ozen yoser b'chtei lahavim, v'zeu Shimu banim musar av, tikablu musar av. Shimu means accept it. You hear it. It's in your head. V'hakshivu, but then when it says v'hakshivu, v'hat oznecha b'chtei ladas lahavim hadbina min hachachma, v'hu chachmo bina. So says the Gra, it's two stages. First is listening and accepting it. That's all included within Shimu. Accepting it, listening to it. And then Hakshivu means comprehending it to the extent that you can yourself inculcate it. Meaning, if someone tells you, don't steal. Okay, so I've heard it, I've accepted it, I'm not going to steal. But now when I comprehend it, why can't I steal? Because you have to respect other people's property. That there's a dignity in other people's humanity, things like that. So that's Shimu and Hakshivu, two steps of the same process. I wanted to take this opportunity to go over another idea, which I oftentimes say, and I've said from the pulpit a couple times, and that is in terms of relationships, these two stages also occur. There is Shimu, there is listening to a spouse, to a child, to a parent, to a friend, and then there's Hakshivu. Then there's really listening, understanding, comprehending what they're really saying. And this is what the social work and psychology field refer to as active listening, right? That listening oftentimes looks like a passive act, but it's also actually very active. If you look at just a quick phrase that I found online, effective interactions with others require actively listening to what others say. Your ears hear the sounds and send them to your brain, but it's your mind that makes sense of the noise. Right? So it's sort of like the physical sound waves going into your brain, but then you actually have to process it, you have to digest it, and you have to comprehend what the person is saying. This reminded me of a book that, I don't know why it reminded me here, because I read this book when I was like, a kid or a teenager, and I don't know why I would ever read it as a teenager, because I didn't read any books as a teenager, but for some reason I read this. It was a book called Tuesdays with Maury, a well-known book, and this piece of it is the only piece, like almost the only piece that I remember from it. But it stuck with me because it really hit home. He says the following when he talks to this Mori. Mori is an older man, and it's basically, he's inviting Mitch Albom to write his eulogy, right? To get to know him so that he can write his eulogy once he dies. It's really a fascinating premise of a book. But either way, I assume it was one of these bestsellers for Mitch Albom. I came to love the way Maury lit up when I entered the room. He did this for many people, I know, but it was his special talent to make each visitor feel that the smile was unique. When Maury was with you, he was really with you. He looked you straight in the eye, and he listened as if you were the only person in the world. How much better would people get along if their first encounter each day were like this, instead of a grumble from a waitress or a bus driver or a boss? I believe in being fully present, Maury said. That means you should be with the person you're with. When I'm talking to you now, Mitch, I try to keep focused only on what is going on between us. I'm not thinking about something we said last week. I'm not thinking of what's coming up this Friday. I remembered how he used to, this is Mitch again, I remembered how he used to teach this idea in the group process class back at Brandeis, right? He's a former student. I had scoffed back then, thinking this was hardly a lesson plan for a university course. Learning to pay attention, how important could that be? I now know it is more important than almost everything they taught us in college. You cannot replace this idea with anything else. This is the bedrock of all relationships, to actively listen. And oftentimes, either because of technology or because of the way our brains are wired, we oftentimes don't listen or comprehend even when we're listening. It's very easy to listen and not comprehend. And I catch myself sometimes also when I'm listening, I hear the sound waves and I process them, but I'm not really comprehending or I'm not really actively engaged. And there have been times that I've said, I'm sorry, I wasn't fully paying attention. Can you repeat that? Mm-hmm. I've said that to people before. It's awkward, but it also shows people that you're trying to really understand and listen to what they're saying. So that's just a little bit of tidbit, obviously something that I've talked about before and something that nonetheless needs a lot of repeating, a lot of work, easier to hear than to do. But the Malbim tells us a different take on this pasuk. Shimu banim musar av. Ani agid v'asaper lachem musar av. I'm going to give over to you. Asaper is a very interesting word for him to use here. But I'm going to tell you and narrate to you the musar of my father. Hainu ha-musar shekibalti me'avi.
What's the difference between agid v'asaper that he feels he needs to use both?
Yeah, that's what I said before. Agid is more harsh, mm-hmm. I think. Asaper is more of like a story. It's a little more nice or sensitive, maybe. Hainu ha-musar shekibalti me'avi. K'moshi yivar b'pasa gimel. We'll get to that soon. It's a fascinating pasuk, which I referenced before. But he's saying, what am I going to teach you in this parak? I'm going to teach you what David told me. What I called him dad, right? So David, ha-melech, taught Shlomo HaMelech certain things, and that's what he's going to teach us. V'hakshivu l'das bina. Interestingly enough, the Malbim reads this pasuk as a shift, that the person that's giving the musar is not the person that's giving the bina. In what way? Says the Malbim, I'm going to teach you shimu banim musar av. I'm going to teach you what my father David HaMelech told me. But hakshilu das bina, v'chutz ma sha'as apra ha-musar sha'amar li ha'av, sha'amar li avi, takshivu gam es asher hisponanti b'zeh mi binasi. Also listen to what I comprehended from what he told me. So this pasuk, although you don't see it, it's a very nuanced read by the Malbim. Because if you look at the pasuk again, the first line, Shimu banim musar av, listen to the musar of the father, v'akshilo das bina. But it doesn't say the das of the father or the bina of the father. It just says hakshilo das bina, and listen closely to know its comprehension. So says the Malbim, that's because the first part is talking about his father's musar. The second part is talking about what he understood from his father's musar, which is a fascinating way to understand the pasuk. The Malbim is saying that Shlomo HaMelech is basically saying, this is what my dad said, this is what I understand him to mean. Right? You ever heard someone say that? You know, I've done that, when I read a source, and I'm not necessarily confident this is the only way to read a source. So I'll say, this is what the source says, and this is what I take from the source. Right, this is how I understand it, and it probably happens in every single class I ever give. But sometimes I give that little disclaimer. Here, the Malbim is saying that's what Shlomo HaMelech is saying. I'm going to tell you what David said, and I'm going to tell you how I understood what David said. How exactly that's going to be within the psukim is a different story, but we'll see it as we go along in the fourth parak. So he says, "V'chutz ma'aseh saper ha-musar she'amar li avi." Avi, takshiva gamas hashem hisbonanti mizem yibinaso ad she'al yedei zeh teidu es hadvarim biyadi brura she'al zeh amar ladas bina. Fascinating read from the Malbim. So there's listening to the musar, there's paying close attention, and it might be that those two things are coming from different sources. If we look at the next pasuk, a pasuk we all know very well, ki lekach tov nasati lachem torasi al tazov. Right? When do we say this pasuk? When you put away the Sefer Torah, some people sing it, some people start afterwards, right? Different strokes, different folks. But ki lekach tov nasati lachem. The Kiddush HaSlevi actually asks a pretty nuanced question on this phrase. Lekach, what's a lekach?
A portion, a giving.
Some kind of, usually it's like a commercial item, something you could take, right? Lekach means something you can take. It's a transactional item. Lekach, tov, nasati lechem. What does nasati sound like? You gave it. That doesn't sound like a transaction. That sounds like a gift. Says the Kedusha HaSlevi that both of them are true when it comes to Torah. That on the one hand, we had to show Hashem a little bit of commitment. That was our transactional aspect of it. And then he gave us the Torah, but he gave it to us as a gift, meaning unconditionally. He's not going to ask for it back. Right? It's always interesting that we go through, you know, the Parshios up through Mishpatim. And the Jewish people did this, they did that, Nasa v'nishma, the secret of the angels, you know, the Karban Pesach, Bris Milah, we have all these things that sort of, the Jewish people sort of justified or earned the Torah, and we go through them. The Nasa v'nishma was a secret of the angels, the Gemara tells us, and that's how the Jewish people got the Torah. Or they had the B'damay Chayi, right? The Karban Pesach blood and the Bris Milah bread. We had these things that earned us the keep of Hashem and therefore the Torah. And yet, at the same time, it's not like if someone doesn't have Bris Milah, then they give the Torah back. If someone doesn't say Nasa V'nishma, then they give the Torah back. That never happens. So says the Kedusha HaSlevi, those are actually embedded within this pasuk. Lekach tov nasati lachem. Lekach, on the one hand, there was some kind of transaction at the beginning of our relationship. You did something. You made some sort of commitment that engendered, you know, that caused you to get the Torah. But at the same time, nasati lachem, I gave it to you unconditionally. Meaning, at its outset, there was a transaction, but once I gave it, it's like a gift. I'm giving it like a gift. I'm never taking it back. You have it for you to keep, whether or not you stay to those commitments. Right, so it's such an interesting Kedushas Levi picks up on that phrase, and we say that every time we put the Torah back. Interestingly, I'm not making drushes on the fact that we're putting the Torah back as opposed to not taking it, but it is interesting that we read it, that we sing it whenever we are touching and sort of glorifying the Torah. And that says Torah Si'at Tazovu. So first of all, we have to understand the difference between the first half and the second half. Lekach tov nasati lachem, Torah si'at tazovu. So, what is the difference between a lekach tov and Torah si? Right? It should say, ki lekach tov nasati lachem al tazovu. I gave you something good, don't forsake it, don't leave it. But if for some reason, Shlomo Melech says, Torah si'at tazovu. Right? So, there's got to be a difference between lekach tov on the one hand and Torah si on the other. Otherwise, he wouldn't reestablish the subject. Okay? So let's look at the Gra. The Gra tells us a fascinating read. What is lekach? Lekach, as we said before, is some kind of transactional item. How do you take a transactional item? With your hands. You pick it up. Lekach means to take something with your hands. Says the Gra, ki lekach tov nasati lachem, in source number 6, hu ha-mitzvos. Kema shekasev chacham levi kach mitzvos, ki ha-mitzvos lokchim biyadayim. To do a mitzvah, you do it actively with your hands. Mary, do you want another sheet?
No.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Lochin biadayim, in source number 6. Lasos Torah si al tazovu, hi ha Torah ki ha mitzvos einem bechol zman. And then the Gra doesn't finish the thought process, but we're going to get in a second. On the one hand, those mitzvos that you do always have fixed times. Now, we do know that there are 6 mitzvos that are what we call tamidios, constant mitzvos. All of them, the reason that they're constant is because they have to do with our mind. They have to do with our perspective on life, of believing in Hashem and things like that. So those things are constant because they're in our mind. But there are other mitzvos that are with our hands. So says the Gra, those mitzvos that are with your hands, or that are active, that involve your body, so those have fixed times. You daven shacharis in the morning. And you light Shabbos candles at the onset of Shabbos. You make Kiddush on a Friday night. Right, so that everything that we do with our body to accomplish a mitzvah is always done at a fixed time. So says the Gra, ki lekach tov nasati lachem, I gave you something good to do. But that thing that's good to do doesn't always apply. The things to do aren't constant. So when it comes to the rest of the Torah, maybe those six mitzvos, and everything else, the perspective. So that's Torah si al tazovu. It's not just those things that you do with your hand, but Torah si. From the word Torah comes from the word more, meaning information, right? That's intellectual. That's not necessarily practical or something to do with your hands tangibly, but something to keep in your mind. So says the Gra, the phrase number one, ki lach atod nasati lachem, is referring to mitzvos that you do with your hands. But Torah si, right, the things that you do with your hands that have fixed times. So what do you do in between? So you still have the Torah, because that's Torah si al tazovu. You never forsake those. Those you never get rid of. That's why it says Torah si al tazovu. Lekach tov, there are some times, tazovu. You finish shachris, so you're done with shachris. So tazovu, you can actually, you know, say, okay, I finish shachris now. Now there's not my, I'm no longer engaging with that lekach tov. It was a lekach tov, but it passes. But Torah si, but the mindset, the intellectual aspects of Torah, al tazovu, those should never leave your lips. Those should never leave your mind. And this is actually very relevant. Halachically, we talk about this in other contexts, or Rabbeinu Tam's Shita, that when you say Birchas HaTorah in the morning, you don't have to say it the rest of the day. Right? Technically, one could make the argument, wait a second, I'm learning now, but then I'm going to go to work. And then I'm going to go to lunch. And then hopefully afterwards, I'll come back to the Torah. Do I have to say another Birchas HaTorah when I learn again later? Isn't that a separate mitzvah? So one could make the argument that it could be a separate mitzvah. But even though it might be a separate mitzvah, says Rabbeinu Tam, once you say the bracha in the morning, you don't have to say it the rest of the day. But why not?
There's no shiur to it.
Well, there's no shiur, but even if there's no shiur, there's still a big interruption.
Right.
You went to work for 9 hours.
But conceivably, you should be still engaged in Torah all the way through.
So this is what Rabbeinu Tam says. It's not necessarily that you're learning while you're working, but while you're going through your day, things come up that are Torah-oriented, hopefully, almost every few minutes. You go to get a drink of water. You say a bracha on the water. You say a brei nefashos after the water. Right? You're dealing with a client. Maybe, you know, it's someone you have to, you know, hold back your anger. So you think about Mesilas Yesharim, whatever it is. There are things throughout your day that's supposed to be remind you that are Torah-oriented, whatever that means. You go to the bathroom, Asher Yatzar, not, you know, different things. A whole list of things that hopefully are in your mind all day. So says Rabbeinu Tam, that's why you don't make another Birchas HaTorah later on. Because hopefully you've been learning all day. And it's a different type of learning, but it's still learning. And that's what the Gra means here when he says, Torah si al tazovu, that the Torah should never leave your mind. No matter what you're doing throughout your day, no matter what activities you might be involved in, you're always going to keep the Torah in mind. So that's what it's referring to. Even though kilach achtov nasati lach, and there are specific times for specific things, Torah si al tazov, you should always be thinking about Torah. So that's how the Gra understands it. The Chomas Anach. Who is the Chomas Anach? I actually quoted him on Shabbos. Commentary on Eov is named the same thing. It's the Chida. Rav Azulai. So he says, an interesting thing here, also understanding or trying to understand the differentiation between, well, not differentiation between these two phrases, but ki lekach tov nasati lachem Torah si al tazov. I guess you could understand it with the two phrases too. But he says, there are two ways that a person holds dear to an item in this world. One way is if it's something very expensive, right? This is the even very halachically relevant also for Shabbos. Muktzah machmas chisaron kis. The things that we're very careful about are those things that are very expensive. Or very, you know, so that's the other part, right? If it's expensive, if it's your computer or your tefillin, so then you're going to make sure, on the one hand, you're going to keep it just for the fact that it's expensive, right? So that itself is a reason to be careful with it. The other possible reason to be careful about something is based on who gave it to you, maybe, or how you got it. It's not necessarily an expensive item. It's not because of its worth. It's not because of its value, or I guess value is a bad word, but it's not because of its financial value, but it's because of its sentimental value, or who you got it from. So says the Chumash Anach, Asher Dedercha Olam de Adam Shekona Chavet Chefetz Bemausav Yochel Abid Osal Chefetz Lozazel Bokikas Bahu. You can do with what you want because you actually bought it. Vuhur Asher Asos Bokir Tano. Achim Adam Gadol Yitain Lo Bematana Chefetz Tzarech Lishmar Chefetz Velo Abdel Lozal Bokhorat Anosin. If someone very important gives it to you, right, you can imagine people in secular culture, you know, obsessing over celebrity autographs or something like that, right? And I know, like, baseball cards and things like that. So he says, so those things might not literally be expensive. Like, maybe it is expensive. That's, you know, something, what I'm talking about, like someone's, I don't know. I saw yesterday on like a sports highlight or something, a basketball player took off his headband and gave it to a fan. Like, no one wants that headband. It's not expensive. No one's going to pay you money for it. But that kid that got the headband probably is, you know, excited about it, right? So there are some things that are expensive, that they're worth a lot of money, and there are some things that are sentimental, that you appreciate, not because of its financial value, but because of its sentimental value. So it says the Chumash Tanach, that's the same thing. V'zeu afil im ein chaviz shava kokach, even if it's not very expensive. That headband was not expensive. I hope not. Shalol zal d'benos in tzarech sheshmor hachevis v'shein nakim mehudar. A person still wants to take care of that item. Make sure it's clean. Make sure it's still in good condition. V'kol shekein, and all the more so, im hachevetz mitzar atzmo nechmar v'tov. Right? And all the more so if the thing that important person is giving you is also an expensive item, how much more so is it something you're going to cherish? So it says that's what he means. That's what it means when it says in this pasuk, "Ki lekach tov," I gave you something very expensive, very precious by itself, regardless of who gave it to you. It itself, the Torah, is valuable, eternally valuable. V'yahalu b'sha'arim, everyone raves about it. V'kal v'chomer denasati b'matana lachem. Ani. How much more so? Not only because the Torah itself is so important, but because it came from Hashem. Meaning, even if we saw no value in the Torah, even if chas v'shalom, someone looks at the Torah and says, you know, it's a primitive book, it sounds like other books from the same time period, I don't care about it. But even if that was your claim, it comes from Hashem. This is a God-given book, you know, but now you have both, that it's an unbelievably, you know, valuable in terms of its depth and its information. So that, on the one hand, should itself justify taking care of it and cherishing it, but also that it came from Hashem. Lekach tov, nasati lachem. It's a lekach tov, and I, Hashem, gave it to you. V'lachein machmas shtayim kehilchasan achas shu lekach tov. Mitzar atzmo v'ashen shani nesati v'matana v'lechvodi torasi al tazovu. Now that you have both of those aspects, that it's important in and of itself, and that it came from Hashem himself, so then you understand torasi al tazovu. Now you can't forsake it in any way. You have to cherish it, as we said before. And now comes that pasuk, which is so unique in the book of Mishlei. Pasuk Gimel, Ki bein hayisi la'avi. I was the son of my father. Not a big chiddush, but we'll see exactly what he means. It's like Rach v'yachid lifnei imi, and I was what? How does it translate Rach here?
Tender.
Okay. Tender and unique, or the only one of my mother. What does that mean? The first, you're definitely the only son. The first phrase doesn't seem to be telling us anything, right? Right. Ben hayisi lavi. I was a son to my father. To my mother, I was tender. I was the only one. So what is this referring to? And I'm not really going to fully answer that question, but I think within Rashi we actually find a very interesting take.
Anything really special to my father.
That's the contrast. Yeah, that's what you find in the contrast. But I think it might be getting to the piece we're going to get to. Rashi says in source number 8, fascinating Havamina. The way that Rashi understands this pasuk is, to me, one of the more, I guess, indicative psukim of all of Mishlei. Meaning, I don't know why it's coming in the fourth perek, but Rashi sort of, he presents a response of those who are listening to Mishlei, and then says this is why that's an unfounded response. So he says the following, Im Tomar Shlomo, Im Tomar, if one were to say, Shlomo hayasone habrios, Shlomo hates people. What do you mean he hates people? Shehizhiron al hagezel v'al harayos. He keeps talking about how people are thieves, people are lusting after the opposite sex, and they're all, you know, just illicit relations left and right. So he says, Diber shenafsho shel adam is avlahem, and he just keeps talking about how people are after their desires. So he hates people. He just has a terrible view of people, right? So says Rashi, understanding Shlomo, l'kach ne'amar bein hayisi la'avi. Don't think that I was just some, you know, bullied kid, and that's why now I'm bullying everybody else, right? I was a son of a very wise man, David HaMelech. Rach v'yachir b'gomer shaya ohev osi yoser. I was the son of a loving father and a loving mother. Now, how exactly one leads to the other in the thought process of Rashi is fascinating. Meaning, one could say, Shlomo Melech, you hate people. You're always out to talk about how terrible they are. So Shlomo says, no, I'm from a loving family. So, what does that have to do with that? What do those two things have to do with each other? Clearly, what Rashi is indicating is that people might assume about Shlomo HaMelech that he's an old grumpy man who's had a terrible life and therefore he's taking it out on everybody else. So therefore, Shlomo HaMelech comes to say, no, I had a great life. I had loving parents. And they, as Rashi is about to say, they were the ones that instilled within me those ideals. Meaning, I'm not a grumpy old man. I learned these things from loving parents. These things that I'm telling you about not trusting people that are thieves and not to go after the people that have illicit relations, that came from loving parents too. And I'm doing it lovingly also, right? Don't think I'm like that old man on the stoop yelling at all the young kids, right? I'm doing it out of love. It might sound harsh, but that's how my parents did it too. And they loved me. So then you look in the next pasuk. So what does the Rashi? How does or like the next pasuk says in pasuk Dalid? So Rashi says you have to read them together. Ben hayisi la'avi rach v'yach livnei'imi. I was the son of my father and tender and unique to my mother. Vayoreini vayomerli, and he taught me and said to me, Yismach dvarai libecha shemor mitzvosai vechyei. Let your mind hold on to my words. Or depend on my words. Yismach is an interesting word here. Keep my commandments and you will live. So he's quoting David HaMelech. This pasuk is a quote from David HaMelech. Vayom vayoreini vayomerli. That he taught me and said to me, Yismach tverai libecha, shmor mitzvosai vechyei. And then the next pasuk also, Knei chachma, knei bina, atishkach ve'atei refi. Right? Don't leave my words. Who's saying my words? David HaMelech is saying my words. So this is what the Malbim was saying earlier, right? That when he says, Shimu banim musar av, that's number one. Listen to what my parents said, Vakshilo daspina, and then listen to how I understand what my parents are saying. So this is what the parents said. This is what David HaMelech said. David HaMelech said to Shlomo HaMelech, he said, Yismach devarai libecha, shmor mitzvosai vechyei. So now let's try to understand. First of all, just to understand Rashi, in a second let's first continue in Rashi's theme. Right? So we just said, Shahaya ohev osi yoser, in the second line in the middle, Vayoreini alkach, Vayochicheni, Vayomer li yismach devarai libecha, ulefi shehochicheni, bedvarim elu alkach, ani mazhirchem alkach. I don't know what this parentheses mean when it says here, Rabbi Yosef Cairo. I don't know what that means. That's what it looks like, right? Rabbi Yosef Cairo? Is that what it looks like? It could be a different Rashi Tevos. Rabbi Yosef Kufresh Aleph. I might be way off base, but I don't know who else it could be. Anyways, so Rashi says what we just said before. You might think that Shlomo is an angry, spiteful old man, but you should know all the things that he's teaching us are coming from his parents, who were, to him, loving parents. Rach v'yachid l'imi. I was the only child to my parents. They loved me with all of their hearts. And they also gave me these messages. And that's why when I'm saying them to you, don't think I'm being harsh or that I'm sonei habrios, in Rashi's words. Because they loved me. Vayoreini vayomerli. So first, well, we'll get into understanding the words in a second. But I've quoted this before, but I've never actually put it down on paper. The book, The Power of the Other. Are you familiar with that?
No.
What drasha did I don't remember the drasha that I gave him. I spoke about the introduction where he talks about a Navy SEAL trying out, and he's in the water and he's drowning and he doesn't think he can make it. Mm-hmm. And then he sees his fellows who already passed the test waving at him from the shore. And it gave him a boost of energy. So in that book, The Power of the Other by Henry Cloud, he talks about four different corners of relationships. I think it comes from, the corner thing always throws me off, but I think it comes from, who do you want in your corner? You know that phrase? So he maps out four different corners. Right? Who's in your corner? Right? Are you in corner number one, which he says is nobody. Nobody's in your corner. No connections. And you're basically lost in life. Corner number two is a bad connection. People that abuse you, right? Oftentimes, corner number two is an extension of corner number one. Meaning when someone doesn't have any connections, they don't have good relationships, they don't have any relationships, so then they'll settle for a bad relationship. Because at least it's a relationship. And then corner number three is a good relationship, but it's really a fake good relationship. It's like everybody's always, it's a yes man relationship. You know the term a yes man? Everyone's always agreeing with you and patting you on the back. You know, in Kansas they had a phrase called Kansas nice. Which is like, everybody's nice in Kansas. The question is if it's real or not. Right? Everybody's nice though. So that's corner three. Corner three, people, you know, they might help you out a little bit, but when push comes to shove, that's not a real relationship. The real relationship everybody's looking for, everybody needs, is a corner four relationship. And that's a relationship where it's strong. The bond is there, regardless of good or bad, no matter what's going to happen, thick or thin. They can give you mussar, and you can take it. They can show you your strength. They can show you your weaknesses. You can help each other. You give each other independence. Right? It's not a dependent relationship. It's not a clingy relationship. It's where you both trust each other, etc., etc. So here in source number 9, you have corner four, real connection. The only one that helps us or our business get better, he's talking about this in the context of a business pitch. Corner four has attributes that are different than the other three. It's the place where we can be real about our needs for others, which overcomes the isolated efforts of corner one. Meaning, we're honest in the fact, I need relationships. Corner one, have no relationships. In corner four relationships, you can be honest with a person and say, I need you. I need a relationship right now, right? You can be honest about it. It is the place where we can be challenged to do better, like corner two, right? Corner two is that relationship where it's a bad relationship, where the person's constantly criticizing you, right? So he says that's corner two. It's also included in corner four, but in a way that is motivating and not diminishing. Not to put you down, but to build you up. It is a place where feeling good happens, as in corner three, meaning you feel satisfied by that relationship, like you do in corner three. But it's based on a real accomplishment, thriving and being connected from both our strengths and our weaknesses. It acknowledges failure and mistakes, unlike corner three, but is able to both metabolize those and use them for learning and getting better. And it has other ingredients as well, such as support, ownership, modeling, enhances self-control and regulation, energizing, challenge with feedback, and more. It is real, where we can be honest and authentic and be accepted and challenged. So this is Shlomo Melch's pitch in a nutshell. He says, yes, I'm being a little harsh, right? According to Rashi, at least, right? But you should know, Ben Hayisi L'Avi, Rach V'Yachad L'Imi, Vayoreini Vayomer Li, all these different things. They're the ones that told me all these things that sound harsh. But it was through a loving relationship that they were able to give that over. If you don't have a relationship with somebody and you're saying the same things, that's corner two. That's going to be harsh. That's putting you down. That's criticizing you. But if you're... And oftentimes, from the outsider, a corner four could look like a corner two. You're being harsh, you're being critical of somebody. So then that looks like a corner two. But the truth is, it's a corner four. You just don't see it because you don't know that relationship that the person has. So that's what's going on here in Rashi. And it's tons of different correlations to this in people's personal lives and otherwise. I was just talking to, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I was just talking to my dad. And he reminded me of a story where in seventh grade, I was playing basketball on the basketball team, and someone threw a pass over my head. And it was a team I really wanted to, you know, whatever. I was trying to get revenge on the team. I was a kid. And chasing down the ball, and I couldn't get to it. Unfortunately, in the gym that we were playing with, so the out-of-bounds line is like 3 feet from the wall. And I was chasing this ball, and I couldn't stop. I rammed my face right into the wall. There was a box for the fire extinguisher that was protruding from the wall. And I knocked out my two front teeth. Knocked him out, like not fully, not from the root, thank God, but in half. So one of these is fake, one of them was glued on, fine. But the reason I'm telling you this is because I was crying afterwards. I was a kid, right? I was crying afterwards. And my father came over to me and said, you know, why are you crying? And I said, because I want to play, and I don't think I can play anymore. But teeth, it's just teeth. Right? They're not. It's not like I can't move. It's not like I wasn't even bleeding because it broke the teeth. It didn't even break the gums. So it was literally just broken teeth. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to play. So my father said, okay, so go play. I'm not going to stop you from playing. It's just teeth. And other parents came over to my father and said, "How he was crying. How? Why are you making him play? He says, you don't understand what happened. You know, this is whatever. So that's what I mean. Some people, you look at a relationship and sometimes you think, that's harsh. You know, he's making him go play after he was crying for being hurt. No, he was allowing me to continue and push forward. But you don't really understand that unless you understand what's going on inside of a relationship. So that's part of what Shlomo Melech is saying here. A corner for a relationship. And then he says, just interestingly, and this is we're not going to focus too much on this from Rashi, but Rashi gives another possible understanding of this pasuk, which we said before was a little strange. Right, Ben Hayisi LaAvi and Ben Yechidi. What was it? Rach V'Yachid LaImi. So he says here, Davar Acher in the middle of source number 8, Davar Acher, Ki Ben Hayisi LaAvi Hanavi Omer. I don't know why he calls him the Navi all of a sudden. Ben Hayisi LaHakadosh Baruch Hu Shehishra Ruchi Alai. He's not talking about David HaMelech, like the Malbim says. He's talking about Hashem. Ben Hayisi LaAvi. I was like a son to my father. Right? Not everyone can always say that about feeling that from Hashem. Everyone knows Avinu Malkeinu, but how often do we know that I'm also the Ben, that I feel like a son? It's not just that I have this father that's all-knowing and all-controlling and can do anything, but I also feel the love like a son to a father. Fine. Rach v'yach livneimi leumasi ani nivchar v'chaviv keben rach v'yach. What does that mean? What is leumati? What is an uma? What?
To my people.
To my nation, right? Like leumi, right? Right. Dati leumi, bank leumi, right? Leumi means national, right? So rach v'yach livneimi. What is? Who is my mother? My mother is my people. Hashem is my father, and my people are my mother. It's a fascinating read from Rashi. It's a Hasidic Vart. It's pretty crazy. Lu'umasi ani nivchar. To my nation, I was chosen, v'chaviv, and beloved, keben rach v'yachid, like their tender and only king. L'kach v'yareini avi. And because, on the one hand, I was a son to my father, and I was beholden to my mother, the Jewish people, therefore v'yareini avi. That's why Hashem told me all these things, because I had that responsibility. I had a lot of weight on my shoulders. My father was looking after me. My mother was watching me. They were all looking at me to do what I had to do. So therefore, Vayireinu Avi. That's why Hashem gave him these commandments. Yeah.
That seems to fit in better with the last part of Pasuk Dalet, because Shomer Mitzvosai, you know, sounds like he's talking about Hashem.
Yeah, not that
David,
is interesting.
Not David HaMelech.
So right.
He's not following David HaMelech.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's true. But I think this is one of those instances that might be not a colloquial mitzvah, but a literal mitzvah. Meaning, David HaMelech was telling him to do certain things. Meaning, it wasn't mitzvah sai like David HaMelech was saying, these are my mitzvos.
Right.
You know, but it's, these are my mitzvos, like the instructions that I'm giving you are my instructions. So it's a literal translation of mitzvosai, not a colloquial one, which we call mitzvos, the mitzvos of Hashem. I think this is one of those instances. But you're right, if it's talking about the colloquial aspect of it, that mitzvos are the mitzvos of Hashem, so then this approach would make more sense. The Malbim, however, takes this a little bit differently. So you'll notice that there seems to be an unnecessary word in Pasuk Dalet. Vayoreini vayomerli. Right? And he taught me and he said to me. Well, okay, just say he taught me, or say he said to me. What's with both Vayoreini and Vayomer? So says the Malbim, Hahora hu shemar elo haderech. What is Vayoreini? What is to be moreh, as I said before? Literally means to show. Right? It's connected to, well, I don't know if it's connected to the word ra'ah, but it's connected to, right, in the end of Beshalach. What's the word? When Hashem gives him the tree, what's the word? Vayoreini Hashem eitz? Vayorehu Hashem eitz. And Hashem showed him a tree, right? And then he put it in the water. Vayorehu means to show. It doesn't just mean to teach. I mean, a lot of the Mefarshim there make drashas based on that word, that if he's taught them Torah, right? The Midrashim talk about that. But here, Vayoreini means to show. Meaning, says the Malbim, Shemar Elo Haderach B'maaseh. David HaMelech led by example. Vayoreini. What did he show me? No, that's it. He just lived. Vayoreini. He just lived. And then Vayomerli, he said specific things. But when you're showing somebody something, you don't say anything. You just live. So says Shlomo Melech, Hahorahu shemar lo haderech b'maaseh v'chein harali darkei chachma aidei sheiraisi maaseh v'hanagasu b'foal. How did I learn from him? How did he teach me? By just being a good person, leading by example. Uchmash kasev gedol shimush shel Torah yosmi limuda. It's greater to, you know, do shimush. How do you say shimush?
But
Gemara is referring to something else. But the activity of the Torah is greater than its actual learning. Vayomerli, and what's Vayomerli? Humasha Amarli Befiv. That's what he said with his mouth. Now, what's interesting is, I think, and this is connected to what he just said. But if you look back at the pasuk, so we have Vayoreini and Vayomerli. He showed me, according to the Malbim, he showed me and he instructed me and told me. Right? And then you have two phrases in the next part of the pasuk, which is a classic, you know, a classic breakdown in the Shlomo in Mishlei. So the first one, Yismach Devarai Libecha, Shemor Mitzvosai Vechye. Number one, you know, depend yourself on these words, or let these words, what does it say here? Let your mind hold on to my words. Shmor mitzvosai v'chyei. So, this translation is obviously taking liberties because there's no mind in this pasuk, right? Yismach divarai libecha. What's libecha? Your heart, right? This translation just completely ignores it, right? Just says it's referring to mind, right? So, you know, depend on my words with your heart, and then keep my mitzvos and you'll live. So, first of all, what does it mean? Yismach devarai libecha. Presumably, Vayoreini, that he led by example, is Yismach devarai libecha. So what do I mean? What I mean is that oftentimes, when it comes to teaching information, when it comes to words and instruction, so we understand that intellectually, right? We comprehend it. There are words. We have to process them in our brain. But when it comes to examples, when someone does something, so we might also process things in our brain, but it has a much greater emotional effect on us, right? When we see something happening, it stirs us, right? We can see it, we can intuit what's going on without really hearing any words or getting any information about what's going on, right? You see someone's emotion on their face, it affects you, right? So when it comes to this pasuk, I think what he's saying is, Vayoreini is links up with Yismach Devarai Libecha. That when he was an example for me, it taught my heart. That's when my emotions were taken hold, right? I was able to intuit emotionally how I'm supposed to live. But when it comes to Vayomer li, and he used to teach me, so he says, Shmor mitzvosai vechyeh. Those are the things I have to shmor, I have to safeguard. Mitzvosai is, you know, not necessarily active, but you have to guard the actual instruction. And thereby you will live. So this is perhaps the two sides of the instruction coin. But if you look at source number 11, so I found an interesting article about the, again, advertisers. We talked about advertisers last week a little bit. But this is in 2016, post the technological revolution that we're still going through. Today, text somehow feels impersonal. Right? You don't connect to it the same way. You need stronger and more engaging ways to express or to perceive emotions. Now technology gives you that. You don't have to spend minutes of your valuable time to understand difficult words about how excited I am about a new service. Instead of that, you can get a preview of that actual service, see photos of people's reactions, and watch video tutorials to see how it works. Visual content affects emotions faster than text by immediately heightening our creative thinking and stimulating other areas of our brain. Visuals can trigger strong emotions in us, and we often tend to remember the pairing of emotions and visuals in vivid detail, meaning visuals, what you can see. Vayoreini, that makes a much stronger emotional impact on a person. That's extremely important for marketers and advertisers to know. If they want someone to remember their product, services, or brand, they have to link it to visual elements, images, videos, and even infographics might work. I would go a step further than marketers, and I would say parents and teachers. What goes much further than giving over a lesson plan or telling your child something is actually doing it. Mm-hmm. And having them observe how you do it. That's going to have an emotional impact. You don't have to show them a video of another person doing it. Just do it yourself. Right? And, classic, I want my son to learn. I'll pay you $1 million to teach him how to learn. Nothing's going to teach your child how to learn better than you learning. When you can do it, they'll do it too. And so it is with all religious or any moral, ethical, values that you're trying to instill in your child or into a student. Just to finish off, so we have Rabbeinu Yonah and this last pasuk. This last pasuk is also a quote from David HaMelech, according to the Malbim. Kinei chachma, kinei bina. Acquire for yourself wisdom, acquire for yourself comprehension. Al tishkach v'al teit me'imrei fi. Do not forget and do not swerve from my words. That seems pretty redundant, right? If David HaMelech was teaching him Torah, so then obviously, Kenei Chachma, Kenei Bina, those are my words. So what does it mean in the end of the pasuk? Al tishkach v'atet me'im reficha. Don't swerve away from what I'm telling you in my mouth. Aren't those the same thing? So presumably, they're different. Rabbeinu Yonah says the following, a very important idea, more important probably for yeshiva guys than for anyone else, but also applies more broadly to everyone. So says the Rabbeinu Yonah, Kenei chachma, kenei bina, al tishkach, ve'al teit me'im refi, have a shakud lilmo Torah. Learn and learn and learn, v'dam ashatav shal habikos, and you should know what to respond to habikos. I don't know why he says that there. U'min ha'chachma, ma'giyin li'ira, l'havin tzedek ha'mishpat, and from that wisdom, you will come to fear and to understand justice. V'az v'hizaher, but however, be very careful. Kisha tikne chachma bina, when you're trying to acquire this wisdom, Shalo tishkach musarim ela. Don't forget how to be a good person. That's what he says. Velo tatem mehem befoal ratza lahazir shalo yishkach musarim bishvil shum chachma shalomot. Don't forsake any character building that we've done here through my muster, because you're on your way to learning more. And because you're on your way to understanding more about the world. Pen yishkachem mitirdas esek hachachma. It's going to take a lot of mental energy to learn all these different things. But that should not take away from the character building that you should also focus on. Oh, and because you're just not going to have time, you're not going to have the effort, the energy. Oh, yaniach me'isasek b'tikun midosav u'me'isbodeid lashis etzos b'nasho ech yizar v'yikayim. Or you're going to... stop doing the exercises that help you. Rather, you're just going to think about what you should do. Ki al kein lo amar al tishkachana v'al teit me'emareha. It doesn't say, don't forget it, and don't swerve away from what I'm saying, because they're two separate things. Lo hamidrash ha'ikar el hamas ha'ikar. It's not that the learning is not the main thing. It's the acting is the main thing. And it's true. There's a lot to learn, and it's going to take up a lot of time and a lot of energy. But more important is how you're actually going to live and act in the real world. So he says, while you're learning all these things, make sure you remember to still be a good person. Whether that's because intellectually your mind is somewhere else, or just in terms of time, you don't have the same time to focus on things. While you're doing that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, make sure you have both. You have the intellectual pursuits, and you also have the character pursuits, that you're continuing to be a good person. So that's what the pasuk means. Kneichach v'knei bina. Phrase number one, yes, acquire wisdom. Acquire comprehension, acquire the ability to think. But at the same time, al tishkach v'al teit me'imrei fi. The thing that I'm telling you, says David HaMelech to Shlomo HaMelech, about how to be a good person, respect other people's dignity, respect other people's property, etc., that sometimes gets lost in your pursuit of all this wisdom. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's what David HaMelech was teaching Shlomo HaMelech, that Mishle is not only about the fact that the Torah is important. Yes, Ki lecha tov nasati lachem terasi atazovu, we have to engage with the Torah. But at the same time, atishkach ve'atei mimrei fi, make sure you're also a good person while you're doing that, because it's not necessarily the case that one thing is going to ensure the other. You have to be careful to maintain both aspects of one's personality, the intellect, and also the interpersonal and behavioral sides of yourself. Okay, that's the beginning of Perek Dalet. I think next week we will have a Legends and Lessons class. I don't know who it's going to be yet, but I know it's going to be exciting. So see you then. Okay, have a good...
Are you doing
yes, God willing, yeah.